Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
Hello and welcome to another edition here of The Damage Report. I am Johnny DiRola. Today is a Friday, such a special day, and it deserves a special co-host. But we've got Brett. Brett Ehrlich, how's it going?
Apparently it's casual Fridays here at The Damage Report. John doesn't even give enough of a crap to wear a suit. You know what? That's a personal affront to me, I think.
I believe that not only are you not wearing a suit, I think we might be seeing the top of a onesie, maybe.
No,
but anyway.
Good point. Very close. This is a Hermosa Beach sweatshirt. I bought at a CVS when I was cold in Hermosa Beach.
That checks out. This is now available on Shop TYT, a little overqualified shirt. No big deal, Shop TYT.
This is now available in Hermosa Beach, for those of you who are interested. And big thanks to Kanye for making this color okay to wear.
Is that a thing? I don't want to know. We had gone a couple of nice months with no Kanye news and you ruined it. But we do have other news of other varieties to discuss. So thank you everyone for being here. In a little bit, we're going to be talking about the most recent, the most recent battles in the war to take down Madison Cawthorn from establishment Republicans. So that's exciting. They've chosen only the most substantive things to criticize him for. So that'll be cool. They're coming for the Trevor Project as well. Bad news for the Democrats in the midterms, which they totally can afford to have at this point, and a lot more besides that. So if along the way, if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button, sharing the stream, if you're on a platform that allows that would be great so the people know we're live, and we will be responding to your comments as we go. But with all that said, Brett, are you ready to talk some news?
Yeah, definitely. I did my other homework. I just handed it in, and so now I can focus on today's events.
Okay. Well, one of these events, by the way, that you will want to stick around for is the throwing away of our garbage people of the week. Can't wait to find out what you all voted for, because of course every week on the community tab on our YouTube channel you can vote, and many, many, many do. So with that said, now let's jump into the news. Oh God, the news can be so weird. Let's start with this.
Be filled with passion and desire. Would like to see your naked body beneath my hands.
Me too. I'd like to do that as well.
So that is just the most recent bit of news that's been leaked from a variety of different sources, hyped from a variety of different sources, with the fairly transparent goal of taking down Madison Cawthorn. Now, in that case, if it wasn't clear from the video, if you're listening to the podcast, he was talking with a friend or a relative. We'll get into it. And at the end of it, the other man puts his hand near Madison Cawthorn's crotch. And that, oh no, I mean, come on, he's done, right? They got him. If the lingerie thing didn't, then this, it's obviously disgusting. It's obviously see-through what's going on here. But here's how it's being presented. So firemadison.com, which is a website, has identified the man in the video as the scheduler for Madison Cawthorn, Stephen Smith. Now, that site is operated by the American Muckrakers Pack, whose self-described sole objective is to ensure Madison Cawthorn's first term in office is his last. And I guess they think that this might do it, but not just the video. They want to at least pretend that this is a more substantive critique than that. So David Wheeler, the president of that pack, uploaded a copy of an ethics complaint that he has filed against Madison Cawthorn. And that complaint alleges that Cawthorn had not properly filed House financial disclosures regarding gifts and loans to Stephen Smith, the man in the video. In his complaint, he also claims that Cawthorn and Smith are living together. And there's a few other little pieces of evidence that we'll get to, Brett, but all of this is fairly see-through, I think. What do you think?
Yes, just like the lingerie he wore in that photograph they also leaked. So here's the thing. This is a great opportunity to point out to people that I believe in more freedom than most people in the Republican Party do. Whereas they want to you to run by them, which consenting adults' crotches you touch. I don't want to do that. As a member of generally the left, I am someone who doesn't give a flying F whose crotch you suggestively touch in an SUV, as long as they're consenting, and they do. That's weird. That is super weird and super anti-American. But that's then the other part of it is when someone's making fun of someone you don't know really well around an audience that you're not really around a lot, it's very telling what attacks they use that they think are going to wreck the person in that audience. It's like for me, if someone seems to be displaying that they are gay, I don't use that in an attack around people who, like me, don't give an F whose crotch you touch if they're consenting. But around them, that's like the worst thing you can do. And that's super weird.
Yeah, if it is the at least arguably plausible source for any sort of critique, it is at most to point out hypocrisy from the individual around topics around that issue. But certainly not, like if you can look at Madison Cawthorn, the current position that he holds in the Republican Party, all that he's done since being elected and all that we've learned about him from before he was elected, and this is the thing that you think should take him down, that he might secretly be gay. That is such an indictment of your own party, of your own party in two ways. One, in as Brett said, that you think that will work amongst your audience. So you're really tipping your hand about the homophobia in your audience. But also it's kind of a tacit admission that you don't think the other stuff will work. I think that you sort of get that the substantive critiques, whether he, and as we'll get to, violated the Stock Act or these other sorts of laws that he's broken. Well, that's clearly not gonna work because we know that our base doesn't give a damn about any of that. But the gay thing might do it. Anyway, as I said, there's other evidence. And so for the second time in just a couple of years, Venmo receipts have become critical to the future of the House. Here you have some payments from Stephen Smith and Madison Cawthorn with the comments, which Venmo for some reason forces you to put for every one of those. I don't understand it. For loving me daily and nightly, the quickie at the airport, the stuff we did in Amsterdam, getting naked for me in Sweden. And this is being presented as more evidence that he is gay. I think that if a Republican congressman was trying to secretly be gay and not have it be unveiled, I think they would realize that this might give the game up. So I'm going to say, I don't think that when he said the quickie at the airport, I don't think they had sex at the airport. I don't think that's actually what happened, Brett. I think maybe they were joking, maybe. What do you think?
Right. All this is stuff that just looks bad if you're a homophobe. Like that's all it is. Because I am, I'm a frat boy. And the weird thing about frat boys is they always like touch each other's butts and say stuff exactly like this. It is super weird, especially like when they turn around and are wildly homophobic in 2 seconds when they step out of the frat house. Like my friends and I are planning a trip, and like I sent a photo of my crotch when I landed in Vegas saying these balls are ready to get wet. I didn't have intercourse with any of them. It's just a weird thing that I did because I thought it was funny, because there's many double entendre, the same as the reach for the crotch. There's a photo of me and another host that's a promotional photo where I'm just trying to make him uncomfortable by, you know, hovering my hand over his balls, because that was the dynamic we had. Mm-hmm.
That's the dynamic that a lot of guys have. Now, whether they should have that dynamic might be a different question, because at least there it seemed like Madison Cawthorn like likes to joke about gay people, which that could be its own problem. I would argue probably not the sort of thing that's going to get him booted from the house real quick. Brett, what
it's hard to find the interesting thing in a story like this because it's also stupid. But the interesting thing is the threads that the right is currently pulling at that aren't there to tell you that everyone on the left is secretly trying to make you gay. They're like, look, there was an email where someone at Disney said in the background of maybe some movie, there might be two moms in front of one stroller. And yes. That means that the right wants you to be so freaking gay. It's crazy. They're grooming you. Meanwhile, Madison Cawthorn's wearing lingerie and exchanging these comments and touching people in the balls and getting his balls touched. I'm just saying, yeah. Like, I don't think that makes him gay. And if it did, I don't give a whooping funt.
Yeah, I thought 100%. But what if there's other news? I mean, you heard that they might secretly live together. Well, Representative Cawthorn says it's ridiculous. Stephen is his cousin, their family. The PAC that filed the complaint did no research, which, look, obviously they're going to deny pretty much anything, but that seems plausible. And apparently back in 2017, Cawthorn calls Smith his third cousin once removed, saying at the time he was working as a hospitality professional at Chick-fil-A and living with him. So that seems like a pretty good defense. The guy's a relative of his that they joke around with and live with. Anyway, Madison Cawthorn has responded to the most recent round of attacks. And we will summarize some of the ones that have come before, because if you're only checking in on the news at the end of the week, there's been a lot of wrinkles in this. He tweeted, many of my colleagues would be nowhere near politics if they'd grown up with a cell phone in their hands. And I think that that's not a bad point. He's saying that there is a new level of difficulty for some younger people because they joke around a lot and a lot of their life is filmed. And obviously, if you want to, it's easy to find something that will make someone look bad and that can be weaponized. And Madison Cawthorn doesn't like it, which is why he's against things like libs of TikTok, which takes a few seconds of video of a person and then uses that to organize nationwide campaigns of harassment to try to get people run out of their job or possibly the city. They would never approve of those sorts of things. Now, look, I will try to be actually consistent. I think we should try to contextualize the things that come out. That said, it's a little bit opportunistic for Madison Cawthorn to talk the way he did. He is saying, though, that the establishment is targeting him with this drip campaign, and there's been a lot of drip. So starting with the cocaine orgies comment that Madison Cawthorn came out with, we've had, I don't even remember in what order, but that he might have violated the Stock Act, that he might have engaged in a pump and dump scheme, fraud with cryptocurrency. The lingerie photos have come out. He's tried to bring a second gun through an airport. I think that's more on him than the establishment. He was pulled over by cops, I think twice now, because basically none of the paperwork he has for his car or license is valid. And I'm probably missing things, honestly, Brett, but it definitely seems like they're coming after him. I would just say, this is the weakest of all of the reasons to try to get him booted from the house.
It depends on your perspective. And right now you've got people, I would argue that the establishment is reading everyone correctly. And so is the MAGA wing, and they are coexisting right now. And everybody's getting what they want. Listen, the difference between the Republicans and the Democrats, there's many, but one is the Democrats don't care if there's a video of you putting your hand near a consenting adult's crotch. Like, they don't care. They give a crap when you do weird stuff to someone who's sleeping, Al Franken. Like, that is something that they do care about. But the right wing does not care. That they know that the right wing's establishment knows that they have an unholy marriage with their base. Yeah. And they play and they manipulate it in every possible way. And the base at least gets catered to in that situation. And they get things that they want. Usually it's stuff that is not going to change their life monetarily in any way. But the left just doesn't do any of that. The left looks at their base and is like, no, I'm actually the pure progressive. And the base is crazy. And you can't have the things that we know you want because we campaign against it. We campaign for it, but they just don't really have that relationship where they will at least placate their base with kinds of things that they might want. That's the difference.
100%. Let's turn now to a slightly different angle on this. There are so many reasons being put forth for you as a conservative to no longer trust Madison Cawthorn or to want him to be primaried or to resign from the House. And it just bothers me so much that there have been so many good ones along the way that the right is cruising past because they don't actually have a problem with it. So I wanted to remind people of a few things. We've covered these before. The main one I want to focus on though is, do you recall back last year in August of 2021 when Madison Cawthorn, there was a video that was revealed of him talking to a group of people where he is talking about the potential need for another insurrection. That the people in the crowd, we can show this headline, GOP Representative Cawthorn warns of bloodshed in comments appearing to endorse more rallies. Yeah, no, he's endorsing it. At one point during that, he's holding a shotgun and he's being asked by people, when are you gonna call us back to the Capitol? And he says, we're doing a lot of planning about that and there might be a need for blood. But that wasn't something that caused the Republicans to turn on him. It was the cocaine orgies thing. The Hitler stuff with the Mein Fuhrer and the Eagle's Nest, that didn't do it. What's come out about him, his personal life back in college in terms of being a sexual predator allegations, that didn't do it, Brett. It was the cocaine orgies thing. And I think that brings up an interesting question. The reaction to it, doesn't it seem to fit more in a world where he was onto something with what he said than where he was just totally talking out of his ass? Like if there was totally no cocaine orgies, they'd get mad if he said that there were, but they're getting really, really, really mad. Doesn't it seem like maybe there was something going on?
Yes, and there's no doubt weird cocaine orgies happening because one of the like poster boys of this kind of behavior is Matt frickin' Gaetz, who has like, you wanna talk Venmo receipts? This guy's got Venmo receipts for cocaine orgies as far as I interpret them. So that's happening. And so I think it's an internal war on that side, but also I'm guaranteeing you that there's been cocaine in the Republican Party since Reagan said it's morning in America because they'd been up all night.
I like it. Anyway, yeah, I don't know that we'll ever know. I did want to add just one little extra angle of this. It was a great tweet by New York City Southpaw. Says the stuff that Republicans, the Murdochs, the Daily Mail are doing to Cawthorn right now is what people suggested they do to Trump at some point along the way to save us all from ever greater catastrophes. It's not undoable. They just didn't want to. It is a great point. I mean, look, there are a number of Republicans that the more establishment old school Republicans clearly have some level of problem with. Kevin McCarthy does on some level have an issue with Marjorie Greene. She makes his job harder. All else being equal, I'm sure he would love to take Marjorie Greene and Matt Gaetz and Paul Gosar and stuff and yeet them into the center of the sun and replace them with Republicans who are more willing to play ball. It's always just gonna come down to, do we feel like we have the upper hand enough to wage this war and come out on top? And with Marjorie Greene, they seem to be signaling that they're not sure they'd win. Certainly with Trump, there were a couple of very early on efforts by people like Rand Paul and Chris Christie to take him down. And then once you got past that, there was Ted Cruz for a bit and even he bent the knee eventually. They all don't seem to think they can actually win that conflict. With Madison Cawthorn, Brett, the calculation seems to be different.
Yeah, they're trying to break him. That's it. And you know why? Because they made him. Because Madison Cawthorn isn't making, he's a paid child actor. He is a crisis actor. You listen to any of the speeches that he's making. He has been basically crafted in a lab and tokenized as a young upstart who fits the mold visually of the Aryans that they love in that party, frankly. And so the only decision that Madison Cawthorn has made in his life of scripted speeches that have been scripted for him, the only decision he's made is that he wants for vacation to go visit Hitler's summer house. Yeah. That's the only decision he's ever made. And so now they realize that they might have a little bit more control to reel him back in because he is a for all intents and purposes, crazy person.
Yeah. And the last thing I'll say is like, maybe for the Republicans, whether this is Kevin McCarthy behind the scenes or if, you know, like Mitch McConnell's involved, I don't know. Maybe it is enough for them that they just don't want him as an elected Republican. But they should understand, Brett, like if let's say that this works and he resigns in shame or whatever, which I don't think is gonna happen. Let's say it does happen. like, he's just going to launch a podcast like the next day.
Right.
They're going to be bringing him on Fox and on OAN and on Newsmax. It'll like his credentials as an anti-establishment Republican will be even stronger. He'll be more popular. He'll be doing the speaking stuff and everything. He's not going to go away. He would, in fact, be unleashed to be crazier on a daily basis. So I would say be careful what you wish for if you're Kevin McCarthy.
But those are different people controlling different things, right?
Yeah, they are.
So the difference is they want him to be Dave Rubin. Mm-hmm. They want him to be the gay they trot out. I'm sorry to put it that way, but that's what happens. They have a black, this is how they think about it in their words. They have a black they can bring out in Candace Owens. They have a gay they can bring out in Dave Rubin that they can use to appeal. They're fine using that. They only though, if they can control that person. And I'm sorry to be making campaign ads for Madison Cawthorn, but they can't really control him right now. And that's an asset to everybody. It's an asset in his mind, and it's the asset in most of the base's mind, and a liability for the establishment. That's why they're coming after him. But the same establishment will trot out Dave Rubin because he'll say whatever you want him to say when the lights turn on.
Yeah. Well, with that said, we are going to have to take a short break. We come back. They are coming for Madison Cawthorn. They're also coming for the Trevor Project, and we'll give you interesting info on that after this. So my experience since winning the Webby is that once you receive this great honor, the haters just start coming for you. Brett's attacking me, the chat's attacking me, Brett's wandering off. You can't, like, once you got the Webby, they just won't stay. Anyway, oh, Brett brandishing his Webby that I'm assuming he picked up off the ground and is now trying to break.
That's true. God, this is really sturdy. So sturdy you could keep your doors open with it.
Oh my God, what category was that?
This is 2010 People's Voice Award winner, How To in DIY Viral Video Film School, Brett Ehrlich. I would have won one the next year, but I lost to Between Two Ferns.
No, well, that's
it was me chops. And Zach Galifianakis.
That's chops. Also, wait, like, how is Viral Video Film School How To in DIY?
It was a how to video on how to make how to videos.
Okay, that's pretty good.
I voted for the other. I was gonna vote for myself, and then I went through and was like, this thing, they had this, there's this one show that had a wheel, mm-hmm. and it would give you a prop that you had to build, and then another wheel that told you how much you could spend on it, and it was like movie magic. I was like, that's way better than my channel.
Yeah. No, things were, the DIY channels I find so impressive. I wish I could do it, but I just don't have the skills. Anyway, with that said, we do have to jump back in the news though. We'll talk more about Webbies and how to's and DIYs later. But we got to get serious. So let's start with this. Basically, the entire political strategy of the right now is to stimulate a new satanic panic, getting people fired up to attack the trans community and increasingly just the generalized LGBTQ community as well. Last year, it seemed like the right realized that socially they had to focus their attacks on the trans community. That was the group that America's decided you can still openly attack and fearmonger about. But it really has widened. And now pretty much the entire spectrum is once again being openly attacked, both in comments made by right-wing pundits and elected officials, as well as legislation that's passing. And there really is no end to this because, would you believe, they're coming for the Trevor Project, which is literally a group that believes that there is too much suicide amongst kids, teens, young people in these communities and wants to stop that from happening. That's who's now being targeted. I want to show you a few examples of this. So it to some extent appears to have started or at least received a lot of fuel being thrown on the fire by this guy, Colin Wright, who's a blogger who says his whole life is dedicated to combating gender ideology information. Anyway, he tweeted, "The Trevor Project, a nonprofit LGBTQ advocacy organization, provides a way for children to chat with their counselors that includes a quick exit feature that automatically quits and erases your browser history to keep parents in the dark." That is then going to be spread as evidence that the counselors of the Trevor Project, which again are trying to stop people from killing themselves, are secretly grooming. They are having sexual conversations with these young people in an attempt to have sex with them. And that is why they want the chat to be immediately dissolved. Now, if you were a complete ignorant a-hole, almost full on swear there, then maybe you can believe this. And you can think that the group like the Trevor Project There might be no other reason why someone would want to quickly erase the conversation if you don't spend even 2 or 3 contiguous seconds thinking about what those conversations are about and what is likely to be talked about there and what the consequences might be for some if their unsupportive parents see those conversations. There were not 2 or 3 seconds, not for that guy Colin, not for all of those who will now run with this, including, by the way, the Moms for Liberty, which is a group that claims to have 85,000 members with chapters in over 35 states. They then spread, "Why is the Trevor Project encouraging children to keep secrets from their parents?" Oh, I don't know, because sometimes those parents aren't supportive. Sometimes they throw the kids out. Sometimes they beat them. Sometimes they kill them. That is a thing that happens, and the Trevor Project is trying to stop that from happening. But Moms for Liberty doesn't care about that. Michael Knowles, a guy who hasn't gone like 30 minutes over the last 4 years without thinking or talking about the trans community, and never along the way has felt the need to even meet a member of the community, try to learn about the experience or anything like that. He's talking about how the Trevor Project is sort of like a front for a pharmaceutical company that wants to drug kids for sex reassignment surgery or something. I don't know what he means, but neither does he. He doesn't have to. He doesn't have to present an actual argument. He's gonna get paid either way. So there's more on this, Brett. But they are trying to get people to attack a group that literally just tries to lower the number of suicides.
They're not pro-life. They're for death. If you're against a suicide prevention hotline, you're not pro-life. That's it. And also, I love people who make my point for me. My point is, for people who are struggling, they need someone to help them. And especially the person least equipped to help them is the person who's the reason why they're struggling. And so this is people who are the reason folks are struggling, trying to get rid of the one lifeline that they can have. And that Mom for Liberty is not for actual liberty, because they won't let the kid be free to be who they are.
Yeah.
And it's this crazy notion that they have that they can parent gay out of people, which is absolutely false. Almost as false as the notion that being gay is at all wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Psychotic. Yeah.
This is just convenient to them. They don't care about the consequences. You know, they want to make sure the taxes stay low. And if along the way you got to break some eggs and the eggs are a couple more LGBTQ teens that commit suicide, whatever. That is what they're doing here. When Host and whatever, I don't know, do they consider themselves activists? I don't even know. Lauren Chen tweets, "Left-wing activists are predatory groomers. If you sit around designing and promoting ways to get in touch with kids so you can discuss sexuality and keep it from their parents, you're a groomer, period, full stop." Well, no, the only thing that had full stop was your thoughts. You didn't think about this at all. She doesn't know what the group does. She certainly doesn't care what the group does. These counselors are trying to stop the kids from killing themselves for you to then present them as trying to commit acts of pedophilia is, it should be unimaginably disgusting, but it has been so normalized. When Elon Musk called the guy who saved those kids in the cave pedo guy, remember that everybody agreed that was weird? It's only been a couple of years, and now it's the most normal thing in the world. You just make these claims, you don't have to know anything, you don't have to think anything. As a quick aside, by the way, these people are, they have a couple things in common. They are absolutely obsessed with this community, despite having no knowledge about it, no compassion for it, anything like that. And the interesting thing is too, I haven't necessarily worked with a lot of these people, but I have done panels with both Michael Knowles and Lauren Chen. And I will tell you that Michael Knowles behind closed doors, I keep telling you, in the green room, randomly was bringing up the trans community. It was super weird. In both cases, once we got an air, they were meek as kittens. Like, they were so nice. It's all the anonymity. You can tweet hateful nonsense that'll get people killed, but when you're actually having to sit down next to someone who's gonna be a vigorous defender of compassion and empathy, they were the most agreeable people in the world. I was on a panel with Lauren Chen. I wouldn't have even come away thinking she was conservative after it. But when they get online, when they're on Twitter, then all of a sudden they're big lions. They're all roaring their hate. It's ridiculous.
Michael Knowles is the dumbest. Michael Knowles is thoroughly the biggest moron. I did a video. There's a compilation, I think it's on Rebel HQ, where it's like a compilation of Michael Knowles' job is to sit there and basically squirt Jergens into Ted Cruz's hand so he can beat himself off. That's his whole function on the right, is to sit there on Ted Cruz's show, The Verdict, and be like, squirt, squirt, now make yourself feel good, Ted. And Ted's like, I'll have a fart thing in my Tesla. So my cans can make fart sounds. What the hell is anyone doing?
Yeah.
All of it is so stupid. All of it is so ridiculous. It's anti-freedom. It's anti-life. It is absolutely pro masturbation, but in like a generic scornography and masturbation sense. It is the fact that they are attacking a suicide prevention hotline and calling it groomers. Groomers has no word. If you no definition anymore. If you encounter a right wing person saying the word groomer, I want you to spam them with photos of dogs that have just gotten haircuts with little bows in their hair. Be like, this is the worst groomer. This groomer is attacking Fluffy. Morons.
Anyway, of course, this is serious. Hopefully, like they have shut down organizations before. I mean, in this case, I don't believe that the Trevor Project relies on like government, like either state or federal government funding. So maybe it'll be a little bit harder for them. But can they make life a living hell for the people behind the Trevor Project, those working it? Certainly. Can they cause death threats to be rained down on them? I'm sure that's already happening. So a lot of fun. Jesse Kelly, Lauren Chen, Michael Knowles, great movement you've got there. I am sure you have very nice houses. I'm sure right-wing billionaires have provided you with very nice places to live while you do this. And reliable paychecks, you're gonna do just fine monetarily. And maybe at some point in your life, when you're laying down in your fancy big bed, you will briefly wonder, you'll have been trying to block this out for a long time, but it might slip in your brain. Did someone die because of the tweet that I sent out? Did I participate in encouraging people to take their own lives? I really, truly hope that they are haunted by those thoughts.
When your goal is for people to issue death threats to a suicide prevention hotline, you really need to reexamine your life choices.
100%. Okay, with that said, we need to jump into something else. Not necessarily the sexiest topic, but certainly consequential. So let's talk about this. The redistricting process in the cycle is not yet done, and we've been waiting to find out about a couple of very consequential states. Will the proposed maps be allowed through? Now, there have been challenges against some in a number of states. The most consequential ones generally agreed at this point. Florida, where Ron DeSantis was just given the unilateral power to determine whatever the districts should be. We wonder what's going to happen with that one. But the big one that actually could have benefited the Democrats was in New York. And that has now been knocked down. New York's highest court just 2 days ago rejected the state's new congressional district maps, which had been widely seen as favoring Democrats. That's what they did. They favored the Democrats. Their new maps would have given Democrats a strong majority of registered voters in 22 of the state's 26 congressional districts. Republicans now at this point hold 8 of what are 27. So they are gonna lose one because of population shifts. That's a natural part of this process. And so they have a 19-8 advantage. They could have potentially gained a few more seats, getting up to 85% of the congressional seats, which, by the way, in a state that Joe Biden won with about 61%. So they should have the majority. They should have more than just one advantage, but that would have been a disproportionate advantage. And that is what you get when you allow politicians to determine their own maps, to do gerrymandering. I don't want it to exist. I want the process to be blocked for both Democrats and Republicans. The way that it's shaking out, though, is that while maps on both sides have been blocked, the most consequential ones that will have the strongest individual effect on who has control of the House after the elections of this fall. Well, right now, again, it seems to be shifted in the favor of the Republicans, because so far Florida's has not been canceled, but New York's has been. And that by itself might be enough to give the Republicans control, Brett.
The idea, it just sucks when, like, if your side plays by decent rules, the other side benefits because they don't. That's a lot of politics. That's all about raw, naked power. And I understand it. I think the solution to all of this is, especially if the fundamental theme of your country is freedom and democracy, that you should have some, at least semblance of that in your overall system of representation. Now, I would say that they're like, well, our system is a Republican, is a Democratic Republic. And so there's systems that might skew it a little bit, but the founders didn't want that. By their own ways that they justify the three-fifths compromise, the founders didn't want that. Mm-hmm. Like the founders wanted to set up a system with three branches of government and checks and balances so that there would be some buffer between the naked power grabs of gerrymanderers and that actually going into effect. And they would use the courts as the dispassionate arbiters of what's fair to draw in terms of lines of representation.
Yeah.
That falls apart when the creep of corruption makes its way to all three parts of government. That's exactly what's happened in the states that have greenlit this kind of stuff, whether they're red or blue. And the only solution is if we have an enshrined in law policy of dispassionately drawing representational maps so that they're not that far away from the breakdown of how people vote in those elections.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's all possible. And by the way, in some cases, there have been reforms in some states that have given it over to nonpartisan organizations. In other states, there have been attempts via legislation, constitutional amendments to move the state away from this sort of gerrymandering. But that doesn't mean that in practice, they do end up doing that. I want to jump ahead, by the way, to Dave Wasserman of the Cook Political Report. He had a tweet where he said, Florida, New York, and Ohio all have extremely similar anti-gerrymandering language enshrined in state constitutions that have been passed by voters. But only New York is on track to actually enforce the reforms. And that's one of the things that's going to produce such a biased result from this. So they all have things that are supposed to stop them from doing the gerrymandering. But is that actually how it's playing out? Well, the legislature literally, like, it would be bad enough if just the Republican state legislature got to determine it. That already would likely produce a biased map. But they decided to just hand it over to Ron DeSantis, one of the most like nakedly partisan politicians in the country. How does that fit in with the Constitution? It doesn't matter. If the state Supreme Court and the US Supreme Court are okay with it, it doesn't matter what's in the Constitution. And in the case of New York, by the way, the court has struck it down. Along the way, though, the Democrats, it's a super complicated back and forth, but they took multiple different actions to try to gain like individual control of this process. This map was not made in the way that it was supposed to. But in this case, the court actually stopped it in part because of that. So when you have some Supreme Courts that are, I think, fairly adjudicating the constitutions, and then you have others that are looking at it in purely political terms, the exact same way that the politicians generating the maps are, well, then again, like it doesn't matter what the people said. It doesn't matter what constitutional amendments they pass. You're going to produce the same sort of biased results as you did previously. And so at this point, look, we already had a lot of reasons to believe that the Republicans were going to do very well in the fall. If they're getting mostly what they want in these maps, and some have been struck down, but not the most consequential ones, then Brett, it is looking like it is going to be really rough.
Yeah, there's a net pickup just by redrawing the lines for Republicans. And yep, there's no justification for that in the overall shift in how people are going to vote. Like, that sucks. Everyone, you know, for those of you who are kind of unfamiliar with what gerrymandering is, basically they can draw lines to make it so that let's say that 55% of the people in a state are going to vote for Democrats and 45% of the people in a state are going to vote for Republicans. They can draw the line so that when it's all said and done in the state house, they like carve people up so that it's like 85% of that seats are held by Republicans because of who had the position when they were drawing the lines. That's what happened. That's why 2020, and they do it every 10 years is when they do the census. It's important that you be in charge of interpreting the census, sadly, and running the census. And it's also important that and that creep is the biggest, is the one word you should associate with it. Because this doesn't happen immediately. Over time, corruption creeps. They get a little control over this office, they get more control over that office, and suddenly they're drawing every line insanely so that it favors them.
100%. Yeah, that's what we're seeing. We're going to see what ends up happening. The primaries might well be delayed for New York. They'll come out with some map, but they're not going to come out with that map. It's not going to be as biased. Maybe we should just get rid of the whole thing. Stop letting these politicians choose their own districts. Anyway, with that said, we are going to take a break. When we come back, lots more to talk about, so don't go anywhere. let's jump into this.
Why people do not like
why
you?
Why are you being so defensive?
Because you're a liar. Why do you want to lie on television for your viewers?
I'm not trying to lie.
No, you're trying
to. I'm trying to ask you.
No, you're accusing me of something, and then when you read the actual words, it tells another story. It
right,
tells
but
the
you're
truth.
You're being awfully defensive.
Okay, so Jim Acosta is a liar. You're lying about Marjorie Greene. All you have to do is read the actual words of her Marshall's Law texts, and it'll be revealed that Acosta is lying about her. He is not being fair. Well, that's sort of how the conversation fell apart. But along the way, he did actually go to the text. So we're going to play a bit more of this. We'll eventually get to that text, and we'll see who actually came out with the truth on their side. Take a look at this.
We're just trying to get some answers. Did you send a text asking for the president to declare martial law? Did you do that?
You know, I don't recall those being my text messages, but have you read the text message that you're referring to?
I did.
Because
yeah,
it actually says if you...
It was misspelled, but it seemed to say
actually
that
you're calling
for martial law.
If you read it correctly, Jim, your problem is you're lying again right now. It says, I do not know on those things. That's what that text message
Why don't you bring up martial law?
No, you know, your problem is you're just one of those liars on television.
Okay, so in the video we're gonna go to in a minute, she's gonna freak out even more. But Brett, I have always thought it's a particularly funny thing that when someone says you talked about it before the text, she says, I don't recall. Okay, the texts come out and you now say, I don't recall if those are mine, which does not make sense. If you showed me a text about me like saying, hey, to my wife, like, oh, you're running to the store, could you pick me up this? If you show me the text, I'll remember that that's mine. And that's about something inconsequential. If it's about martial law, you know whether you texted or not. But at the same time, Brett, that she cannot remember if she ever texted anything about this incredibly important topic, she is also dead sure that one part of the text proves that she was not advocating for it. She's not sure if the text is hers, but there's one part that definitely was hers, and it definitely proves that she wasn't calling for Marshall's law.
It is, Marshall. It was crazy. I don't know which Marshall, but Marshall McLuhan, Thurgood Marshall, one of their laws, Murphy's Law. I think she's mixing Marshall Law with Murphy's Law. But Margie's Law is that everything will go wrong. Mm-hmm. This is like when the kid breaks something, it's very obvious that they did it. And the parent is like, did you do this? This is in your room and you were the only one home. I heard your voice. You were cackling and you stopped when I heard breaking. She's like, no, I didn't do it. I didn't do that thing. But if I did do this thing, like it was fine. Like it was not a bad thing I did. That's her. It's so transparent and so stupid. And he's doing what journalists should do, which is just ask questions. I don't like Jim Acosta. Mm-hmm. I think he loves spotlight too much. And he always is like smirky and crappy. But he's not doing anything wrong there.
Yeah.
He's asking her questions in a bird dog.
Yeah. And the issue is that he is running up against what many journalists are, which is even when you have the proof, the evidence, they will just continue to lie because they know that their base doesn't actually care. They're not concerned at all about it. It is so see-through. I do not know on that. Is that like a regional thing? Because I thought it was a typo at first. She kept saying it over and over and over again in the video. Is that a thing? Is it like how, you know, you call it soda in one place, pop in the other? I do not know about that is how I think of it. I do not know on that over and over and over. She kept saying it. But anyway, I would also say that her saying, a lot of people are talking about martial law. I do not know on that. You should talk to him about it. That is not, so she thinks that's a defense, but you brought it up. Like as a hypothetical, a lot of people are talking about how the only way to stop Biden is to put a bullet in his head. I do not know on that, but you should bring it up with Trump. Am I clear? Am I innocent in that? No, you brought it up. You decided to take what apparently was a conversation that you don't know on anything about, that other people were having. You decide to surface it to the inner ring of Trump's people. That implicates you.
Just the strings that the right is pulling at for every argument that they have. Critical race theory. Not what critical race theory is. Fake news, not what fake news is. Transgender laws, like that is not they're trying to foist on your kids grooming. No, all of that is so tenuous and based on a copy of a copy of a copy of something someone heard. We're showing you all the stuff you said about overthrowing democracy and killing the vice president. Here's the proof. We have it here. Here's a text message where you're basically saying, hey, someone tell the president you're ratting on people, a best case scenario to you, that are trying to declare martial law. We have the proof. Say something about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, by and way, they're like, the oh, that is you're pulling things out of your A.
The timeline is so damning, too, because that text, as we've said previously, was sent on January 17th, which means that like 11 days after the insurrection, mere days before the inauguration, she decides to bring up that which she does not know on. Why? Why a few days before the thing are you talking about last ditch radical attempts to stop democracy from happening? I just, you know, I was just bringing it up, just casual thing. It's like I might have been asking if you saw the most recent season of Barry. I'm just bringing it up. I don't know on that, but you know, it's whatever. You can bring it. No, like it is so clear. And the fact, if she hadn't sent it, or if she even wasn't sure, which is her cover story, it's Marjorie Greene. She definitely would say that she didn't do it if she thought there was any plausible deniability. The fact that she's continuing at this point to say, I don't know. I mean, come on. First of all, these have been verified. We know that it was you. She would definitely lie. In this case, she is clearly worried about being caught in a lie, not like in public opinion terms, but in legal terms, if she's caught in a lie in that particular area. And I think that that is also as transparent as can be.
Yes.
By the way, we asked the audience, did she send the marshals text on YouTube? And right now it's at 98% yes, 2% no. Who's that 2%? What are you doing? What are you doing with us? Can we prep to move on to the E block? We only have a few minutes. I want to make sure that we get to that. There was Jamie Raskin had a great thing on the floor about Marjorie Greene. We just don't have time. So let's jump onto this. Okay. Former police officer Derek Chauvin is now trying to appeal his conviction for murder. Of course, this is the murder of George Floyd that touched off nationwide protests that went on for many months. And shockingly, in this case, there was actually consequences. It happened so rarely, but with Derek Chauvin, there were. Last June, Judge Peter Cahill sentenced Chauvin to 22 and a half years in prison after jurors found him guilty of second degree murder, third degree murder, and second degree manslaughter. Now, so that was the consequences. There was always a chance it was going to be appealed. It is being appealed. Now, we want to give you the argument that he's making about why those the terms of that, the sentence shouldn't go through. His attorney laid out a number of challenges, including that the trial should not have been held in Hennepin County where Floyd was killed. Now, generally you do these sorts of trials in the area where it happened. But they're arguing that it had become such a big national story at this point, and people had so much information about it and had such strong feelings about it that that could have influenced things. And the lawyer says several potential jurors expressed concerns during the jury selection process that if Chauvin was acquitted, they would fear for their personal safety and worried about more violence. This, he said, the lawyer, that several of them said they were intimidated by the security measures implemented at the courthouse to protect trial participants from protesters. So they are saying that effectively, yes, the jury came down with this decision, but they were being influenced by the social conversation that was going on. Brett, what do you make of that?
I love this. There's so much greatness here. Like every other trial about local police or investigation should happen here. Mm-hmm. I don't want to pull at that string. We definitely should have the district attorneys who are responsible for dealing with cops on a daily basis and probably have relationships with them. We should have them continue to investigate the cops who kneel on people's necks, for instance. But this one rose to such a high level and specifically was unfair because I'm sure there's another part of America we could have found where someone could look at a dude kneeling on someone's neck for 8 minutes and be like, nah, that's fine. We just need to find that place. That's where we should have the trial. So stupid.
It's ridiculous. And by the way, in this particularly, like people knew about Floyd and Chauvin everywhere, like all over the country. Now, look, he's allowed to do his appeals. That is a part of our justice system. I have this sort of like queasy feeling developing already that like this was basically this is the DOJ like football being held out, you know, thinking, oh, consequences. The football's 22 and a half years, and then it's just going to end up dissolving. That could happen. We will have to see. We're not there yet.
And their last go ahead.
In that same area in Minneapolis, a new report found that nearly 1 in 4 times that a cop uses force, the evidence in that case contradicts the officer's story. This is what a review of cases found. That is a shockingly high percentage of the time. It is directly contradicted by the eventual evidence. So bear that in mind. And that's on top of all of what else has come out about the MPD, about racial bias and all that. Amazing studies, look them up. That said, we are unfortunately out of time. Marissa wants me to know. So if you are on the podcast on our linear platforms, thank you so much for watching. But if you're on the members app, YouTube, Twitch, we got a lot more coming. We're going to take a couple minute break, but Brett and I'll be back after that. So don't go anywhere. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.